everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Beans Dollar Podcast for the day after Mueller. It's the 25th of July, 2019. That's a Thursday if you're playing the home game. I'm Derek Hunter. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for all you do to spread the word in this podcast. I couldn't do it without you. Well, technically I could, but it would be weird because nobody would be listening. And the cats, my God, they're asleep in the room. So I appreciate awake people listening to the program and spreading the word and telling a friend and all that good stuff. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. We're doing the Kaylee McEnany book drawing today, so it's too late to enter for that. I got all your entries. I've been really horrible with email. I'm sorry about that. But I've gotten all of them. You're all in, and we'll see who wins. The interview for tomorrow is today, so it's too late to enter. Sorry. But a lot of you have entered, so now you're entering for the Carrie Severino, Molly Hemingway signed book, which we're not giving away until next. It's very complicated. This is what happens when I get out ahead of myself. But don't worry, you stand as good a chance as you ever did to get a signed book. So you got that going for you. I'm not going to announce. No, you're just going to have to tune in tomorrow to see who the interview is with. They've got a book out, and you see them on Fox News a lot. They're a Fox News contributor, and that's all I'm going to say, just so I don't jinx it. Okay, there. Good Lord, what a day it was. What a day, what a news day, and what a flop. Before we get to it, though, I'm proud to say this episode of the Daily Caller podcast is sponsored by Keeps. Losing hair sucks, and two out of three guys will experience hair loss by the time they're 35. Introducing Keeps, the easiest and most affordable way to keep the hair you have. These FDA-approved products used to cost so much, but now, thanks to Keeps, they're finally inexpensive and easy to obtain. Starting at just $10 per month, you'll never have to worry about hair loss again. Getting started is super easy, and signing up takes less than 5 minutes. Just answer a few simple questions and snap some photos to complete your online doctor consultation. A licensed physician will review your information online and recommend the right treatment for you, and then it's shipped right to your door every 3 months. Keeps offers generic versions of the only two FDA-approved hair loss products out there. You may have tried them before, but never for this price. Keeps treatments are up to 90% effective at reducing and stopping further hair loss. Some men do experience hair regrowth, and at best, men will get back up to 20% of the hair they lost. Only $10 to $35 per month. Plus, now you can get your first month free. One hell of a deal for keeping your hair. For a limited time, receive your first month of treatment free. Go to keeps.com/dailycaller. That's keeps, keeps.com/dailycaller for your first month of free treatment. keeps.com/dailycaller. It's a hell of a deal, and we appreciate them coming on board for today's program. Oh, man, what a day it was. The big hearing. I went and had my annual physical, my first ever physical as a human being. Turns out that I'm still alive. Although I guess I did have physicals when I was a kid for various jobs, and I worked for Parks and Rec doing maintenance for a summer. Discovered I had my first hernia that way. That was fun. Then 2 years later, I had my hernia on the other side, which was worse because the incision got infected. So that was a joy. But since then, nope. Now I went to the doctor, and they drew blood, and they did all these things, and that was fun. It's over, though. It actually was painless. If you're out there and you haven't had a physical, you should probably go get a physical. Especially if you're Robert Mueller. Good Lord, does that man need a physical? I mean, he's fine and physically, I suppose, but mentally, I'm not really sure. I don't know what he was on his A game, but if that was his A game, and if that was what Democrats had their hopes pinned on, it was a disaster. We have tons of audio, so in case you didn't watch all 6 hours or whatever the hell it was yesterday, we will play you a lot of the relevant portions, most of the relevant portions, and a couple of complete exchanges that just decimated the Democrats' narrative. They were running away. The media was very upset with what happened yesterday. Robert Mueller didn't give them what they want because it didn't seem like Robert Mueller could give them what they wanted. It seemed as though Look, here's a little secret about Washington, D.C., and it drives me nuts. And it has driven me nuts since I first set foot in Washington, D.C. There are plenty of people who do amazing things throughout their entire lives and their career. Ed Meese is one of them. When I started working at the Heritage Foundation, it was my first week. I got off the elevator. I was in the bookstore, which was on the fourth floor because it was only dealing with people over the phone and internet orders. Nobody was walking into the Heritage Foundation to buy books. So I'm sitting there. All right, I get off the elevator, fourth floor, and I walk past Ed Meese talking to Ken Starr. Now, I'm fresh out of college. It's 2001. So it's June of 2001. So Ed Meese was always Ed Meese, nicest guy you could ever meet. And Ken Starr was still fresh in my mind. And I'm like, holy crap. And I go in my office. It wasn't even an office because it was a bookstore. Had a glass door, and I'm staring out the glass door like a fanboy looking at this going, is that really happening? Is that what happens in Washington, D.C.? Very nerdy. I don't know what to tell you. So I make no apologies. So I called my parents. And I said, you'll never guess who's sitting outside my door. And I told them, and they're like, oh, that's nice. They couldn't care less, but I was excited. And there are a lot of people. Ed Meese is one person who could sit on his laurels, who could have, since he left the Reagan White House, been known as for what he did, for being Attorney General, and gotten figurehead jobs or no-show jobs they didn't have to do anything for to get a nice, big, fat paycheck. He didn't. To his credit, Ed Meese, to this day, is engaged and engaging and incredibly nice and was always in the office. He's since retired, so he only goes in the office a couple days a week, from what I'm told, but he was there every day when I was there, and he didn't have to be. On the other hand, Washington, D.C. is littered with people who dine out on things they'd done in the past for the rest of their lives. God love them. I wish I could get one of these no-show jobs where they just want your name on a letterhead, and all you have to do is sign on to a donor letter or give a couple of speeches, and you hammer a six-figure check that you don't do anything for because you were the deputy undersecretary of something insignificant in a past administration. Most famously, when I first came to Washington, there are fewer and fewer of them now, but still many. It was the Reagan administration. If you worked in the Reagan administration, if you were the assistant to the stamp licker in the mail room of the White House under President Reagan, you could bill yourself as a former Reagan administration official, and you could get one of these cushy jobs. Or any job. You could write your own ticket in the conservative movement. Same thing in the liberal world if you worked in the Clinton administration, although you'd probably be hired by a media organization, some cable network first. But there are people from both parties who dine out and live off of forever the fact that they worked in a particular administration, and they are treated like rock stars by the people who love those administrations. They're great for donors. Donors love it. Ooh, they've got a whole bunch of official people, muckety-mucks, who worked in the XY administration. Whatever. Who cares? Robert Mueller seems like that. I don't know that he's dining out on it. He was asked to do this job. He didn't seem up to the job yesterday, and it makes you wonder whether or not he was actually doing the job, or if he was just the guy, the figurehead, who was paid to put his name on a report, to give it some gravitas. A whole bunch of Democrats, Democrat donors, people who went to Hillary Clinton's victory party, people who've represented the Clinton Foundation, all these people were hired, and then you put in this figurehead to just kind of sit there, don't worry, Bob, I know you're retired. You just hammer these checks, you show up every couple of months, you get briefed on what's going on, and then you can go back to the villages or whatever. It really seemed like elder abuse to me. I'm watching this hearing, and he's out of it. He doesn't know the details of the investigation that he allegedly headed. And I thought, this really is elder abuse. And then I did a quick search on elder abuse, and wouldn't you know it, I found a public service announcement that actually shocked the hell out of me and how dead on it was. Listen to this.
there was this big bruise on my friend's face. I told myself she'd fallen. I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to think her own nephew could have hit her.
I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to believe it. My mother's bank account was emptied, and her caregiver had taken control of it.
I didn't want to see it. My father's refrigerator. There was hardly anything in it. That's unusual for him.
I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to hear it. Special Counsel Robert Mueller was called up to Capitol Hill to testify, and it became abundantly clear immediately he had no idea what was going on. He hadn't really been involved in the investigation. He probably hadn't read the report with his name on it. Still, Democrats were badgering him, desperately trying to get him to implicate the president in some sort of grand conspiracy or criminal activity. He became so confused, began asking for questions to be repeated, looking for citations, looking desperately for anybody to help him. Why would they do that to him?
Many of us don't want to see the signs, don't want to see that a senior citizen is being abused physically, emotionally, sexually, or financially. If you suspect elder abuse, call the police or your local agency on aging. You don't have to prove abuse is taking place to report it. Remember, elder abuse is a crime.
So see the signs, stop the crimes.
To learn more, visit ncpc.org.
That PSA just, it hit me. Like, wow, that's dead on. Prophetic. That's really what that hearing was yesterday. It seemed like elder abuse. Robert Mueller did not know what was going on a lot of the time. He couldn't hear. He couldn't understand. He was confused. He wouldn't answer. He was evasive. You can be evasive and refuse to answer without seeming like you don't know what's going on. Somebody emailed me, or maybe they tweeted at me. I forget which it was. But it was an astute observation that it reminded them of Frank Drebin from Police Squad or from the Naked Gun movies. It was that confusing and that sad to watch. I'm sitting there watching this thing in the doctor's office, and then I get home and I caught the second one. It was a guy named Jeremy sent it in. So he reminded him of Frank Drebin. I just looked it up in my email. Thank you, Jeremy. That was the perfect analogy. It's like, oh my God. What? Who? What? Where? Where am I? What? Could you repeat that again? Don't take my word for it. Here's just a snippet of samples of Robert Mueller seeming wildly confused.
The president committed the crime of obstruction. You could not publicly state that in your report or here today.
Can you repeat the question, sir? You're going to have to repeat that for me. Can you repeat the last part of that question?
Yeah. Which act? Pardon?
Can you read the last question?
The last question was
recited. I want to make certain I got it accurate. I'm sorry, could you restate?
The individual is in fact obligated to provide what's being demanded by the regulation or statute, meaning you don't have any wiggle room, right?
I'd have to look more closely at the statute.
Well, I just read it to you.
And what was the question, sir, if I might?
Correct.
And where are you reading from on that?
I'm reading from my question.
Then could you repeat it?
Okay.
Is that correct on the screen?
Can you repeat the question now that I have the language on the screen?
Is it correct?
What was the question?
Pardon?
Can you read the last question?
The last question was
recited. I want to make certain I got it accurate.
Attorney number two in the Inspector General's report and Strzok both worked on your team, didn't they?
Pardon me? Can you ask?
They both worked on your team, didn't they?
I know. I heard Strzok. Who else were you talking about?
Attorney number two identified in the Inspector General's report.
Okay. And the question was?
Volume 2, page 87 and 88 of your report. True?
I'm sorry. Could you again repeat the question?
That was just a sampling of the guy who was built up as the savior of the Democratic Party, the savior of the Republic, coming in riding on his white horse, ready to save the day and save the country from Donald J. Trump. He didn't know what was going on. That was just a sampling. He didn't seem familiar with his own report. Look, I've written a book. I remember before my first interview about the book, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, holy crap. What if somebody asked me, what if one of the interviewers read it? I was sitting down with Brent Bozell for a C-SPAN interview for Book TV. And, you know, Brent Bozell's a smart guy. And I'm thinking, what if, like, Brent asks me something I don't remember writing in the book? What if I blank? I don't know. A book, I wrote 90,000 words for this thing. But you go through it so many times. It was so important to me that I went through it many, many times. The editing process is a long and arduous process that there was really nothing. It all came to me in the moment. I remembered all of it. You would think if you're writing a report of this magnitude and it's your name, your reputation right there on the cover of it, you would be familiar with it. And Robert Mueller was not familiar with it at all. He didn't seem to have been involved in the process very heavily. When asked how many of the interviews he sat in on, he said very few. Well, then what in the hell was he doing? He was probably golfing. He was probably out. He was probably enjoying his retirement and would just swoop in. He was there to add gravitas. He was there, as they were constantly reminding us in the media, he's a Republican. This Republican-led investigation. And well, it's not really Republican-led if you don't show up and lead. This seems to be the revelation from yesterday. A guy named Chuck M. emailed in, and it was very appropriate what he suggested for the show. This is from The Godfather.
But I didn't know until this day that it was Rossini all along.
What the American people didn't know until yesterday was that it was Andrew Weissman all along, that it was the team of Democrats all along, and that Robert Mueller was I can't even say he was along for the ride. He showed up occasionally and was briefed on it. He was the figurehead. That was it. He's been resting on his laurels. I can't blame him, but I can blame him for taking the job in the first place if he didn't want to actually do the job. Democrats were wildly disappointed. Before we get to clips of the actual testimony, as it were, I want to play a couple of clips of the media because they were heartbroken. They were devastated. I'll start first with Trey Gowdy over on Fox. He's a Republican. He's a conservative. It's not surprising what he said. I just want to show you how it kind of echoes what they were saying on the liberal networks. And it was dreams being crushed all inside the Beltway.
Democrats today, though, are not closer to impeachment than they were yesterday.
No, they're not closer to anything other than wishing this had never happened. Bad facts make for bad witnesses. Bad witnesses make for bad hearings. And this one was an abject, miserable failure. The person who learned the most about the Mueller report today was Bob Mueller. I say that sadly. He was not engaged. He didn't interview the witnesses. He clearly didn't write the report, which means those under him did, which means the issue of bias is all the more important. It was a terrible day if you were a Democrat.
It was a terrible day if you were a Democrat, which is why I'm glad every day I am not. Now, you could say, that's just Fox News, Derek. What do you expect? It's Trey Gowdy. He's a Republican. All right, let's go to MSNBC's Jeremy Bash talking about Mueller and how this isn't going over particularly well for Democrats.
I have to say that far from breathing life into the report, he kind of sucked the life out of the report. I thought he was boring. I thought in some cases he was sort of evasive. He didn't want to explain or expand on his rationale. He seemed lost at times. He was kind of flipping through the report, trying to find passages that members of Congress were reading to him. I thought it slowed things down, and I thought it really was a very ineffective defense of his own work. I don't think, by the way, he had to go after anybody or seem partisan or seem like he was doing anything more than a professional prosecutor would do, which was clearly and succinctly explain the evidence, explain the law, and show some passion, show some sense that the president's conduct here was concerning, that it violated some sense of what the Constitution says a president should do. So I fear that this hearing set back efforts to hold the president accountable for what the president did, and also hold ultimately Russia accountable for what they did.
an unabashed liberal on an unabashed liberal network saying, oh my God, this is a disaster. Another MSNBC liberal, I don't know why I'm having difficulty with speaking that word, is Ari Melber. He's a liberal in good standing. He's a show host over on MSNBC. He had a very similar thing, man. It just, Mueller's out there, they wanted Mueller to throw punches. They wanted Mueller to go out and nothing landed.
I think the end of the day is there was a lot of talk about today being the time that people would see and hear and feel some of the stories which I objectively are concerning or shocking in this report. And I'm not sure that at the end of the day, Bob Mueller was the one voicing that. Some of the members on the committee did, but he really didn't. And so that leaves, I think, the country watching and saying, okay, we've been waiting for this. What was this that we just saw? And if it was an arcane and interesting interbranch discussion, maybe that's a good thing, Brian, because maybe these are complex issues. But ultimately, it didn't land where the Democrats said they were hoping, at least for part one on obstruction.
They're all like kids, so excited about Christmas. And then they open up their boxes, their presents, and it's all like underwear and socks. Like, ah, not a single set of Legos. What the hell is going on here? One more, and then we'll get to the actual clips from the hearing. This is ABC's Terry Moran. ABC wants impeachment. They all want impeachment. They desperately want impeachment. That was what this was supposed to be a springboard to. Turns out it was just a splat. The pool is empty. There was nothing to dive into. Listen to Terry Moran.
That question, was the ball advanced?
No. Impeachment's over. I don't think Nancy Pelosi is going to stand for her members bringing forth something that is going to obviously lose in the Senate, lose with the American public. And the problem with Mueller's testimony on this issue is that he had to carry the ball for them some way, whether he wanted to or not, at least by being a vigorous, strong, rock-solid prosecutor. And he looked like somebody who'd slowed a step or two, and perhaps, as the Republicans are starting to put out there, maybe he wasn't even in control of all those angry Democrats. Maybe he's a figurehead, somebody from the past that they put there so they could do their dirty work. That's the theory they're coming out with. It's not going to be bought by Democrats, but they needed more fuel for any kind of impeachment effort.
They needed more fuel for any kind of impeachment effort, and they didn't get it. Well, maybe Robert Mueller was just being super green. He didn't want to burn any energy because he was afraid of his testimony's carbon footprint. I cannot express to you how disappointed Democrats are. Nancy Pelosi has, according to published reports, has told her Democrats that they can continue to talk about impeachment, but they're not really going to move on it. If it works in their district, if it helps them get reelected, they can talk about impeachment all they want. But this thing, at least for now, is dead because Mueller did not deliver the goods. It was so bad that even left-wing news outlets had to call it what it was, a complete and total disaster. Politico. It doesn't get more liberal than Politico. Their headline, "The Mueller Fizzle." It was a disaster. To put it in perspective, I'm going to use a clip from a Democrat, Congresswoman Jackie Speier. California, big time liberal. She opened up her testimony. It was kind of funny watching all the Democrats going, "Well, Mr. Mueller, you're a patriot, you're a hero. I want to thank you for your service. Oh, we couldn't have done this without you, blah, 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 blah." Apparently we did it without him. But Jackie Speier got the big kiss-ass award when she said that he was the biggest patriot in the room. What does that have to do with everything? I will say that I was pleasantly surprised, actually seriously surprised and shocked, how effective Republicans were at using their time to ask serious questions. They didn't get any answers, but that became the story, that Robert Mueller wasn't answering serious pointed questions, whereas Democrats wanted him to read passages from the report he seemed unfamiliar with. He didn't know where it was. Where was it? Where can we get to? And they ended up reading it, so they didn't even get the audio version of the report themselves. It was funny. But Jackie Speier she gave Robert Mueller 1 minute and 37 seconds to tell the American people, this was this is what's called a Hail Mary in politics. They wanted something from Robert Mueller and they weren't getting it in the roundabout way of asking him direct questions and getting him to say things that they wanted, because he seemed confused and unfamiliar with the material. So Jackie Speier, Congresswoman Speier from California, just said, here's a minute 37 seconds. Please tell the American people what you want them to know about your 448-page report. She always, it was one of the big mantras yesterday was, nobody's read this. The American public hasn't read this report. We want the movie. We've got the book. We want the movie. It's very condescending. Like, they're deeming the American people who have better things to do and no interest in this and recognize this as the garbage witch hunt that it was. So they're not going to waste their time reading 448 pages. They're saying, well, they only don't support impeachment because they don't know. They just don't get it. The American people are too stupid to get this. So this hearing was to put it in plain English for dumb people. That's kind of the theory that Democrats had going into this. They weren't getting it. And by the way, the American people, it shows their lack of interest. They know that this was garbage. They know there was no Russia collusion. The idea that possibly firing Robert Mueller or trying to fire Robert Mueller or ordering a staffer to fire Robert Mueller and then getting into a debate about it is somehow obstruction of justice when the guy works for the President of the United States. The special counsel worked in the Justice Department, served at the pleasure of the President. He could have been fired at any moment perfectly legally, just like James Comey being fired was perfectly legal. If you can fire somebody for any reason you fire them for is valid. But Jackie Speier, desperate, just please, here's a minute and a half. Please, God, give us something. Tell us what, you know, talk about how Donald Trump is a puppet of Russia and an evil man and he needs to go or some good God, tell us he obstructed justice. Tell us anything. And Robert Mueller didn't use a minute and 37 seconds or 39 seconds or whatever it was. He used 24 seconds with his answer. And Speier was so lost and upset that he didn't give her, because he didn't even go anywhere near what she wanted, that she just yielded back the rest of her time. It's a hilarious exchange. It is, I'll use a golf analogy. You see these people out there. Look, I'm not a great golfer. I'm an okay golfer. When I golf, I wear shorts. I wear a t-shirt. I wear my Converse All-Stars. And I have a set of clubs that I found in the garbage. I'm not kidding. It's a good set of clubs. They're old. They're probably costing me yardage. But I found them in the garbage, in a bag. It was a nice set. I forget even who makes them. I think they might be TaylorMade. But I was out walking one night, and there's sitting in the garbage. I'm not too proud to pick something out of the garbage. So I picked them out of the garbage. But you see these people, you clearly have spent a lot of money on their clubs, on their outfit. They got the little hat, they got the polo shirt tucked in, they're wearing the glove, they got the golf cleats, they got everything. They go up there and they got the latest, greatest ball, and it's on the tee, and their drivers are all covered in those sock things and everything. They get up there and they take their time lining up the shot. They're like Judge Smales from Caddyshack. And you think, well, this person must know what they're doing, right? And then they slice it right into the woods. That's what this was like.
All right. Let me ask you this. Oftentimes when we engage in these hearings, we forget the forest for the trees. You have a very large report here of over 400 pages. Most Americans have not read it. We have read it. Actually, the FBI director yesterday said he hadn't read it, which was a little discouraging. But on behalf of the American people, I want to give you a minute and 39 seconds to tell the American people what you would like them to glean from this report.
Well, we spent substantial time assuring the integrity of the report, understanding that it would be our living message to those who come after us. But it also is a signal, a flag to those of us who have some responsibility in this area to exercise those responsibilities swiftly and don't let this problem continue to linger as it has over so many years.
All right. You didn't take the whole amount of time, so I'm going to yield the rest of my time to the chairman.
All right. You decided to address Russian interference in the election and Facebook messages and nothing about obstruction of justice. So I got nothing. I got nothing, Director Mueller. So I'm going to yield back my time. It was funny. My dad called me up afterwards and he's like, what's with these Republicans? Because at the end, Republicans were just saying, you know, thank you for coming. We got nothing else. And my dad said, what did they do that for? And I said, you don't want to beat a dead horse. You don't want to be that person. You don't want to get into that elder abuse PSA. Democrats desperately did. And if you noticed, the longer that it went on, the longer the questions from Democrats got. They were putting the story out there and hoping Mueller would say something, and he didn't. So once they realized he's not going to say anything, they just said, well, here's the story, and what do you think of that? And he goes, I'm not going to comment on that any further. Okay, well, what about the blah, 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 blah? Well, I'm not going to comment on that. It's out of my purview. It's just, it was not what they wanted, ladies and gentlemen. The Democrats have the sads. They have the big-time sads. That being said, there were some moments in there that were worthy of note. The first one, the best one. We'll start with the best. I'm not going to save the best for last. I'm going to save the best for first. This is Congressman John Ratcliffe talking to Robert Mueller. This exchange, I'm going to play the whole thing because the whole thing is devastating. And this was right off the bat. This was, I think, the first or second Republican to ask anything in the first hearing. He talks about the presumption of innocence, which is kind of a bedrock principle in the United States. It's not adhered to so much anymore when it comes to Republicans. You got this big story in New York Magazine by one of the women who tried to do a hit job on Brett Kavanaugh with the ridiculous allegations that nobody could acknowledge or remember. They desperately tried to destroy Brett Kavanaugh, this woman Jane Mayer at New York Magazine. She's back now trying to rehabilitate Al Franken. Remember Al Franken? 8 women came forward and said that he groped them or kissed them forcibly. And they said, well, there's no evidence of any of that. And Jane Mayer did this big pseudo-investigation into a little bit of it. It basically came down to his first accuser, Leanne Tweeden, is a conservative, and therefore she's not to be believed. And Al Franken should have had the presumption of innocence, which is something they never afford anybody without a D after their name. Remember how long it took Al Franken to be forced out of the Senate while they're all going, all women must be believed. I mean, not those women, but all women must be believed. Now, suddenly, when it's one of their own, they're saying, wait a second, due process is important. But they were trying to ruin Brett Kavanaugh at the time, so they had no choice. They had to get rid of the dead weight in their own party, the hypocrites in their own party. Now they're having buyer's remorse. Well, John Ratcliffe, Congressman Ratcliffe, asks Robert Mueller about this new standard that was created in the Mueller report. Might as well just call it the Weissman report. In the special counsel's report, that there was no exoneration, that they did not exonerate the president of the United States. That is not a legal standard by any stretch of the imagination. Juries do not come back and say, we, the jury in the above entitled case, find the defendant exonerated. Prosecutors do not say, we have exonerated this person. That's not how it works. They're already exonerated. They are presumed exonerated. That is what the presumption of innocence means. Innocent until proven guilty. And they did not prove anybody guilty. They did not prove the president guilty of anything. Yet the wording of the Weissman report says we not only did not prove anything, we did not exonerate him. And that's where Democrats have been hanging their hat on this obstruction charge, on this bogus obstruction charge. So Congressman Ratcliffe gets into this with Robert Mueller. Robert Mueller, again, is not, I don't know what he was like at the top of his game, but I'm told by good authority that this was not it yesterday. And Ratcliffe absolutely decimates what the special counsel's team did in their report. In all honesty, volume two of the report on the so-called obstruction should not have ever been written. They found nothing to charge. They should not have done it. It is the printed version of the James Comey press conference that had everybody up in arms with Hillary Clinton. Now, it's the same people going, well, this is wonderful and we must investigate this further. But I'm straying. I want you to listen to this whole thing because it's absolutely devastating.
The report on the bottom of page 2 of volume 2 reads as follows. The evidence we obtained about the president's actions and intent presents difficult issues that prevent us from conclusively determining that no criminal conduct occurred. Accordingly, while this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. Now, I read that correctly?
Yes.
All right. Now, your report, and today you said at all times the special counsel team operated under, was guided by, and followed Justice Department policies and principles. So, which DOJ policy or principle sets forth a legal standard that an investigated person is not exonerated if their innocence from criminal conduct is not conclusively determined?
Can you repeat the last part of that question?
Yeah. Which DOJ policy or principle set forth a legal standard that an investigated person is not exonerated if their innocence from criminal conduct is not conclusively determined? Where does that language come from, Director? Where is the DOJ policy that says that? Let me make it easier.
Go ahead.
Can you give me an example other than Donald Trump where the Justice Department determined that an investigated person was not exonerated because their innocence was not conclusively determined?
I cannot, but this is a unique situation.
Okay, well, you can't. Time is short. I've got 5 minutes. Let's just leave it at you can't find it because I'll tell you why. It doesn't exist. The special counsel's job, nowhere does it say that you were to conclusively determine Trump's innocence or that the special counsel report should determine whether or not to exonerate him. It's not in any of the documents. It's not in your appointment order. It's not in the special counsel regulations. It's not in the OLC opinions. It's not in the justice manual. And it's not in the principles of federal prosecution. Nowhere do those words appear together because respectfully, Director, it was not the special counsel's job to conclusively determine Donald Trump's innocence or to exonerate him. Because the bedrock principle of our justice system is a presumption of innocence. It exists for everyone. Everyone is entitled to it, including sitting presidents. And because there is a presumption of innocence, prosecutors never, ever need to conclusively determine it. Now, Director, the special counsel applied this inverted burden of proof that I can't find and you said doesn't exist anywhere in the department policies, and you used it to write a report. And the very first line of your report, says, and you, as you read this morning, it authorizes the special counsel to provide the attorney general with a confidential report explaining the prosecution or declination decisions reached by the special counsel. That's the very first word of your report, right?
That's correct.
Here's the problem, Director. Special counsel didn't do that. On volume one, you did. On volume two, with respect to potential obstruction of justice, the special counsel made neither a prosecution decision or a declination decision. You made no decision. You told us this morning and in your report that you made no determination. So respectfully, Director, you didn't follow the special counsel regulations. It clearly says, write a confidential report about decisions reached. Nowhere in here does it say, write a report about decisions that weren't reached. You wrote 180 pages about decisions that weren't reached, about potential crimes that weren't charged or decided. And respectfully, by doing that, you managed to violate every principle and the most sacred of traditions about prosecutors not offering extra prosecutorial analysis about potential crimes that aren't charged. So Americans need to know this as they listen to the Democrats and socialists on the other side of the aisle as they do dramatic readings from this report, that volume two of this report was not authorized under the law to be written. It was written to a legal standard that does not exist at the Justice Department, and it was written in violation of every DOJ principle about extra prosecutorial commentary. I agree with the chairman this morning when he said Donald Trump is not above the law. He's not. But he damn sure shouldn't be below the law, which is where volume two of this report puts him.
just absolutely devastating. Right there, Democrats realized that they had a problem. Mueller didn't know what was going on. Republicans were prepared and came loaded for bear. It was a shocking performance because nobody's more critical of how bad Republicans generally are in these sorts of hearings than I am. I've witnessed them, and this time they knew exactly what to do. They knew exactly what case to make, and Democrats had no answer because they had a weak case. They had no case at all. They just had the media on their side, and the media was beside themselves going, oh, this is terrible. Impeachment's off the table. Chuck Todd was probably crying in the green room, getting more makeup on his face, trying to cover up his sad tears. It was amazing. I tweeted out that I felt bad for the lineups, the primetime lineups of CNN and MSNBC, because they had to polish this turd. They had to. They couldn't come out. Rachel Maddow couldn't open her show going, wow, what a mess. Democrats came away weaker. The case for impeachment is weaker today than it was yesterday after that hearing. She can't say that. She's already hemorrhaging viewers. They were luring some of them back with the catnip of, don't worry, man, when we get Mueller up there, oh, look out. Finally, we'll have somebody willing to call the president out. And then you get Mueller up there and he doesn't know what the hell is going on. He doesn't know where he is. Yet they have to continue to tell their audience that they are moving closer and closer to landing impeachment, to nailing the president of the United States, and they aren't. I don't know how you do that for an hour. I don't know how you sit there on national television and lie to your audience. But then again, I'm not paid seven figures to do it. You write me a big fat check, I could probably find a way to do it. Until then, I'm just going to have to deal with the reality of yesterday. And the reality of yesterday is Robert Mueller is out of touch. He was asked about the origins of the investigation. Now, you would think of the counterintelligence, the spying and all of that, and the Trump dossier, the Steele dossier, as they say. He didn't seem to have any idea. He wouldn't even admit that whether or not he read the thing. I'm not prepared to discuss that. I think it's pretty clear that he hasn't read anything, to be perfectly honest with you. But when it comes to this investigation, you cannot disconnect how the counterintelligence operation that was launched by the Obama administration came into being. Mifsud tells Papadopoulos a lie, and Papadopoulos allegedly drunkenly repeats it, and suddenly the intelligence community springs into action because some low-level guy that nobody'd ever heard of with a weird last name drunkenly told an ambassador that, oh, the Russians guy here, Russians got something. Well, he was told that by another intelligence officer, Mifsud, who the special counsel admitted in his report lied to investigators three times. And when asked by Jim Jordan, why didn't you charge this? If you write in your report that somebody lied to you three times, why weren't they charged with lying to federal investigators? That's really all they got other people on. Aside from tax issues that had nothing to do with the investigation that they found while crawling through the colon of Michael Cohen and Paul Manafort's lives, all they got people on was lying to investigators. So you've got this guy, a key witness, the guy who kicked off this whole thing. We still don't know why. We still don't know whether he was U.S. intelligence or Russian intelligence. But I suspect the amount of protection that he's getting, he's most likely both, and the U.S. finds him useful. The Obama administration was probably protecting him, and the Obama holdovers and the Democrats on the Mueller commission likely protected him as well. Because you can't write in plain language the guy lied three times, and you're not going to charge him with lying to federal investigators when you went after a three-star general, Michael Flynn, for lying to investigators, especially after the investigators themselves, the FBI agents, in their notes at the time wrote that they did not believe that Michael Flynn had lied to them. So if that's at best, and being generous, and I'm not normally generous on these things, but I'll be generous for this analysis point of view. I don't believe this, but if you're being generous, that you decided that whatever Michael Flynn's lie of working for Turkey and getting paid by a Turkey to lobby on their behalf and not declaring yourself that and taking money for a speech, if that was worthy of prosecution, then how in the hell was what Mifsud did not worthy of prosecution? If your investigators didn't think Mike Flynn lied, but then later on decided that they would, and the case against him was never tried in court because Flynn was broken by the special counsel, meaning not mentally, but financially. They made him rack up so much in legal debt that he had to sell his house and were threatening to go after his kid, so he cut a plea deal. If you're willing to do that to a three-star general, why are you giving Mifsud a pass? Mueller had no answer, was not interested in talking about it. It was almost as if he'd never heard of him.
The gentleman from Ohio.
Director, the FBI interviewed Joseph Mifsud on February 10th, 2017. In that interview, Mr. Mifsud lied. You point this out on page 193, volume 1, Mifsud denied. Mifsud also falsely stated. In addition, Mifsud omitted. Three times he lied to the FBI, yet you didn't charge him with the crime.
Excuse me, did you say 193?
Volume 1, 193. He lied three times, you pointed out in the report. Why didn't you charge him with the crime?
I can't get into internal deliberations with regard who would or would not be
charged. A lot of other people for making a false statement. Let's remember this. In 2016, the FBI did something they probably haven't done before. They spied on two American citizens associated with a presidential campaign, George Papadopoulos and Carter Page. With Carter Page, they went to the FISA court. They used the now famous dossier as part of the reason they were able to get the warrant and spy on Carter Page for a better part of a year. With Mr. Papadopoulos, they didn't go to the court. They used human sources. All kinds of, from about the moment Papadopoulos joins the Trump campaign, you got all these people all around the world starting to swirl around him. Names like Hal Downer, Mifsud, Thompson, meeting in Rome, London, all kinds of places. The FBI even sent a lady posing as somebody else, went by the name Azra Turk, even dispatched her to London to spy on Mr. Papadopoulos. In one of these meetings, Mr. Papadopoulos is talking to a foreign diplomat, and he tells the diplomat, Russians have dirt on Clinton. That diplomat then contacts the FBI, and the FBI opens an investigation based on that fact. You point this out on page 1 of the report. July 31st, 2016, they open the investigation based on that piece of information. Papadopoulos tells the diplomat Russians have dirt on Clinton. Diplomat tells the FBI. What I'm wondering is, who told Papadopoulos? How'd he find out?
I can't get into the evidentiary filing.
Yes, you can, because you wrote about it. You gave us the answer. Page 192 of the report, you tell us who told him. Joseph Mifsud. Joseph Mifsud's a guy who told Papadopoulos. The mysterious professor who lives in Rome and London, works at teaching two different universities. This is the guy who told Papadopoulos. He's the guy who starts it all. And when the FBI interviews him, he lies three times. And yet you don't charge him with a crime. You charge Rick Gates for false statements. You charge Paul Manafort for false statements. You charge Michael Cohen with false statements. You charge Michael Flynn, a three-star general, with false statements. But the guy who puts the country through this whole saga, starts it all for 3 years we've lived this now, he lies, and you guys don't charge him. And I'm curious as to why.
Well, I can't get into it, and it's obvious, I think, that we can't get into charging decisions.
When the FBI interviewed him in February, FBI interviews him in February, when the special counsel's office interviewed Mifsud, did he lie to you guys?
Can't get into that.
Did you interview Mifsud?
Can't get into that.
Is Mifsud Western intelligence or Russian intelligence?
Can't get into that.
A lot of things you can't get into. What's interesting, you can charge 13 Russians no one's ever heard of, no one's ever seen, no one's ever going to hear of them, no one's ever going to see them. You can charge them. You can charge all kinds of people who are around the president with false statements. But the guy who launches the guy who puts this whole story in motion, you can't charge him. I think that's amazing.
I'm not certain I agree with your characterizations.
Well, I'm reading from your report. MIPSID told Papadopoulos. Papadopoulos tells the diplomat. The diplomat tells the FBI. The FBI opens the investigation July 31st, 2016. And here we are 3 years later, July of 2019. The country's been put through this. And the central figure who launches it all lies to us. And you guys don't hunt him down and interview him again. And you don't charge him with a crime. Now, here's the good news. Here's the good news. The president was falsely accused of conspiracy. The FBI does a 10-month investigation. And James Comey, when we deposed him a year ago, told us at that point they had nothing. You do a 22-month investigation. At the end of that 22 months, you find no conspiracy. And what's the Democrats want to do? They want to keep investigating. They want to keep going. Maybe a better course of action is to figure out how the false accusation started. Maybe it's to go back and actually figure out why Joseph MIPSID was lying to the FBI. And here's the good news. Here's the good news. That's exactly what Bill Barr's doing. And thank goodness for that. That's exactly what the Attorney General and John Durham are doing. They're going to find out why we went through this three-year saga and get to the bottom of it.
It's just another brutal exchange. Why not this guy? If you're going after everybody else, why write in your report that he lied to you three times and then say, well, but we didn't do anything about it. I mean, what are you going to do? Somebody's just going to lie. He had no answer. He couldn't answer. He wouldn't answer. He could answer pretty much anything he wanted. He chose what he didn't want to answer. And when he did, I swear to God, if you put together just Mueller talking, aside from his opening statements, which were read, prepared, he probably spoke in the, I guess it was 7 hours of testimony. He probably spoke about 20 minutes. That's it. Honestly, could you repeat yourself and yes or no, or I can't comment on that. Those were his answers. It was like a soundboard where you go online and you can just make stuff up and make it sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger and make him leave your answering machine message or something like that. That was the testimony. That was the day. Now, the Fusion GPS, which is an integral part of this entire thing, Fusion GPS, the Veselnitskaya woman, the woman that had the honeypot who had the meeting that everybody's all up in arms about a Trump Tower, that lasted about 12 minutes, and nothing came of it, was in league with Fusion GPS, Glenn Simpson. She'd met with Glenn Simpson the day before the meeting. She met with Glenn Simpson after the meeting. I think she called him right after the meeting. Clearly, there's something there. Fusion GPS was the middleman, was the buffer zone between the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic National Committee for the Steele dossier, which was used to get the FISA warrants to get all of this spying on the Trump campaign going. Kind of an important organization, kind of an important name. You would think the guy running the organization, running the investigation, would be familiar with that. In this exchange, Robert Mueller seems confused. He says he doesn't know what Fusion GPS is, which either is an argument for, you know, the Attorney General's investigation, that this thing really has to go forward because nobody's looked into this, or an indication that Robert Mueller is slowly suffering from dementia. If that's the case, get him some help. It really, I think, is an indication that Robert Mueller wasn't involved in this thing, and the Democrats that he hired to run this investigation did, or somebody hired, who knows who hired them, did all of the work and just ignored things that were inconvenient.
When discussing the June 2016 Trump Tower meeting, you referenced, quote, the firm that produced the Steele reporting, unquote. The name of that firm was Fusion GPS, is that correct?
And you're on page 103?
103, that's correct, volume 2. When you talk about the firm that produced the Steele reporting, the name of the firm that produced that was Fusion GPS, is that correct?
Well, I'm not familiar with that.
Let me just help you. It's not a trick question, right? It was Fusion GPS. Now, Fusion GPS produced the opposition research document widely known as the Steele dossier, and the owner of Fusion GPA was someone named Glenn Simpson. Are you familiar with?
This is outside my purview.
Okay.
There was, however, one. It is amazing. I don't know. That's beyond my purview. I wasn't even in town that month, man. What do you want from me? I wasn't even in town that month. I was on vacation during this entire investigation. There was a moment, a glimmer of hope, if you will, for Democrats at the first hearing. It was destroyed by Mueller and a correction in the second hearing. But there was only one thing for them to hang their hat on, for them to get very excited. Dare I even suggest they get aroused over. That was when Congressman Ted Lieu of California, a Democrat, an incredibly ignorant person, and you can tell by the fact that he just moved on after this because he's just reading from a script. He missed the answer. It was picked up by liberal outlets. Oh, my God, the smoking gun. We got it. Finally, we got it. Until after lunch when Mueller corrected it. But I want to play the very short clip of Congressman Lieu getting what he was desperate for. Not really. There's nothing after it. But he really didn't understand it. He moved on. And then we'll play the correction. But first, listen to the smoking gun that got everybody during the lunch hour excited.
The reason, again, that you did not indict Donald Trump is because of OLC opinion stating that you cannot indict a sitting president, correct?
That is correct.
OLC stands for Office of Legal Counsel. It is the Justice Department guideline that says that a sitting president cannot be indicted. Right there, you would think Democrats have been implying this since the Mueller report came out. Well, the only reason the president wasn't indicted, the only reason is that the Office of Legal Counsel told Mueller that he couldn't indict the president. So that, and there was pushback against that. So you think right there, there's Mueller saying that he would have indicted Donald Trump were it not for the Office of Legal Counsel guideline. That should have been, and was at the time, a stop the presses moment. All the liberal outlets ran around with this story. Oh my goodness, now this news. I mean, they're still spreading this clip. Now this news, which is a worthless left-wing site, is still tweeting this clip hours after the correction came. So for that lunch hour, they're like, oh, my God, we got him. We now, because that means Congress has to act, because then the only way to get justice in this case for the obstruction of justice that Donald Trump committed is to impeach him. That was the only thing. His office, he broke the law. The special counsel determined that he broke the law. And the only thing saving him from being charged with breaking the law was the fact that he's president of the United States. That means Congress must act. Well, after lunch, Robert Mueller came back and somebody told him what he said, apparently, because, again, he seemed out of it. He didn't seem to know what in the hell was going on. He was unfamiliar not only with his own report, but what was coming out of his own mouth. So in the afternoon session, in his opening statement, Mueller took a pin to all the liberal balloons across the country.
Now, before we go to questions, I want to add one correction to my testimony this morning. I want to go back to one thing that was said this morning by Mr. Lieu, who said, and I quote, "You didn't charge the president because of the OLC opinion." That is not the correct way to say it. As we say in the report, and as I said at the opening, we did not reach a determination as to whether the president committed a crime.
And with that, that was it. The only thing they got out of the hearing, had the only balloon that was filled with hopes and dreams of the left, was popped. He didn't understand the question. That's not the correct way to say it. We didn't make a determination at all. So the old was, we only didn't charge him because he's president and we couldn't. And he said, no, no, that's not true. We didn't actually make a determination one way or the other. All the nightly newscasts had to be rewritten. The scripts were thrown into the trash because they had nothing to hang their hat on. It was a big dud. I don't know if there's been a bigger dud in all of history. The Iran-Contra hearings in 88, I think it was, when Oliver North finally got immunity and the news reports were saying, geez, look out. Now that Oliver North is free to testify, boy, howdy, this is the end of the Reagan administration. He's going to just devastate everybody. We're going to rip Oliver North apart, and by proxy, we're going to rip Ronald Reagan apart. Then Oliver North gets up there, and when he's able to say things more than just plead the Fifth Amendment, he became the star He just crushed every Democrat up there. And that was something to behold. That was probably the biggest backfire. Well, maybe Christine Blasey Ford. Her testimony was so ineffective, and her voice was so vocal fry as a woman in her 50s, sounding like a teenager and unsure of what happened to her. Maybe that was up there, but those two hearings are probably the silver and bronze medalist. The Robert Mueller hearing and the Democrats' backfire on that one definitely, definitely wins the gold. That is all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. I hope you enjoyed the little parody there of the elder abuse PSA. Glad I thought of that. Be back here tomorrow. Another exciting episode as we get ready for Friday.
Can you repeat the question?